Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Hello and good morning, everybody, and welcome to another exciting edition of Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors. This is a spotlight series we've been doing here at Atlanta Business Radio for most of 2016 now, and very happy to bring in you another exciting episode today. I'm your host, Ryan Redhawk McPherson, and alongside me is Bonnie Buell-Russick. Good morning, Bonnie.
Hey, Ryan. How are you doing?
Excellent. What's new with you since the last time we had a show? A great show last time about the body language expert.
Oh, thanks. That was fascinating. I think I could sit there and talk to him for a couple hours.
Yeah.
What's new? I feel like I've been traveling all over the place. I was in, since I've last seen you, I've been in Florida and Cleveland and somewhere else.
For business or pleasure?
Primarily business.
That's good then.
So yeah, no, we're busy. Busy right now.
So busy at Bonnie Buell-Russick Marketing, BBR Marketing, right?
BBR.
And that's great. So looking forward to kind of rolling through the rest of 2016 with some good business.
Yeah, I don't know how it got to be August already, but here we are.
Here we are once again. And once again, you brought in a great guest, a subject matter expert that we're going to talk to here today about employment law issues, how to avoid getting trouble as a business owner. So introduce us, please, to our guest.
Absolutely. This is, I am happy to introduce us to Cheryl Legree. She is an employment law expert and attorney with, what is the name of your firm? I had it here and now I don't.
Legree, Atwood, and Wolf.
Legree, Atwood, and Wolf. And tell us a little bit about what you do and your experience, Cheryl.
Sure. Currently, there's three of us, and we represent employees in discrimination lawsuits. For the most part, we do some work with non-competes. We'll do some contract negotiations and severance reviews. But the bulk of our work is employment litigation. And we've been in business since April 2015. So I myself am a small business owner. I've been practicing employment law since 2002. And I started on the defense side, representing corporations, switched to the plaintiff side, representing the employees in 2007, and started my own firm with Eleanor and Steve in 2015.
Oh, that's fantastic. And I don't know, some listeners may remember earlier in this year, we actually had an employment attorney on who had expertise on the and actually represents the companies. And part of the reason I wanted to have you on, Cheryl, is, you know, you work with the employees when they sue their companies. And, you know, business owners, I think, could learn so much from your experience of, you know, how do you stay out of trouble? I think, and actually, I'd love your comment on this. I would imagine that most business owners aren't out there intentionally breaking laws. That they are aware of, but that may not be the case.
You know, it's interesting. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure that that's always true. For example, with wage hour, the overtime laws, I think some companies do make business decisions that will pay less if we don't pay overtime. It won't cost us as much to get sued. I am not saying that happens all the time, but it certainly happens.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think especially large companies, no. Their MO is not, let's discriminate against people because of their race or because they're pregnant. But they may have bad managers who work for them.
Exactly.
You know, that's how these things happen. I think you're absolutely right in that companies know what they're supposed to do for the most part. Some of the laws are more complicated. The mm-hmm. Family and Medical Leave Act is full of traps for employers. The FLSA, the Fair Labor Standards Act, overtime, full of traps for employers. You know, but my advice as a business owner, my advice is always err on the side of caution.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that's advice that a lot of business owners follow.
Oh, okay. So, I mean, you're talking about traps. I would right. be a little curious to know what some of these traps are, particularly ADA and FMLA, but then we can go into the others as well.
Well, the biggest ADA FMLA trap is, you know, employers assume, employers that the FMLA covers, first of all, you have to have 50 employees in a 75-mile radius. So employers to whom the FMLA applies think, well, once my employee has taken their 12 weeks of leave and they're still out sick for another month, I can fire them. The problem is that ignores the existence of the Americans with Disabilities Act, which requires or can require that leave of a definite duration is a reasonable accommodation for a disability. You know, I can't even count how many cases I've had for people who have cancer and are in treatment, and their employers say, well, your 12 weeks are up. Your job's not protected anymore. I'm sorry, you're still in radiation.
Mm. Oh, wow.
So
that seems so harsh.
It does.
It does seem harsh.
As a business owner, too, and I can't imagine somebody making that decision, but, you know, we have talked to businesses and clients who are in difficult situations where it's like, okay, how do we make the decision to run our small business and have the people on board that we need, but yet also respect the needs and the laws of employees? How do you manage that or balance that, I guess, in some ways?
Well, you know, FMLA is unpaid.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're really in that much of a dire strait, and I'm not trying to make it sound like an easy decision, mm-hmm. but hire a temporary employee to cover mm-hmm. while that employee is out. You know, there's plenty of temporary agencies. And I absolutely understand that that is not always possible. You know, but I can't tell you how often I meet with people on FMLA and ADA claims. And this is, you know, a good part of my work, probably 75% right now, where I meet with potential clients who tell me, I know they posted my position and filled it while I was on leave.
Oh, wow.
It happens all the time. And they'll get a phone call that says, look, we really can't do it without you. Can you come back early? No. Come to find out they've already hired someone for that job. And they know they're not supposed to do that.
Okay, they know that that's not right. You know,
right.
That's not a...
Sure.
But what's driving them to do that? Is it the bottom line? Is it the employees? I mean, who's making these decisions and why?
That's a tough question, right? I think sometimes people assume, my employee will be okay no matter what. And this isn't the kind of person who would ever sue me anyway.
Hmm.
That is never a good business decision, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
let's not go with that assumption. Yeah. I mean,
it's never a good business decision. Yeah. And I've heard small employers say that all the time. Well, this isn't a person who would ever do anything to me, and they work extra and they don't tell me how many hours they're working. Nobody wants to keep track of their. I mean, me as a business owner, I have a really hard time getting our two employees to keep track of when they're working. Right?
Oh, tracking time is like the worst. I'm sorry. We have to do it. I mean, most businesses, particularly professional services, have to.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I it's one of the worst things. I'm always like, hey, if you put your hours in, I got an invoice, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
So,
right.
I understand
it's,
that.
So it's pushback from the employee perspective too, because until you've been fired, you're not necessarily worried about what was happening at work prior to that. But that would be one of my biggest piece of advice to business owners is, okay, they might be your best, most loyal employee today. Something that could happen tomorrow that would change their mind. And all of a sudden you're looking at a potential lawsuit. Not because you were necessarily, like you said, Bonnie, doing this out of any kind of spite or ill intent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had employees over the years that want to go that extra mile. Okay, but write down your hours. Let me pay you.
Right, right. Mm-hmm. And let me do what I need to do. And you therefore get the compensation that you deserve for the job that you're doing.
Right.
Yeah, I can definitely see that.
Yeah, right. That makes sense. And from the employee's standpoint, so how much is actually on them to report their hours, make sure if they're on their leave and they're going through treatment, do they have to report in, you know, how much treatment they're going through to prove this?
That's a great question. And I think this is the hardest part for employees as individuals who are sick. You know, I will hear all the time from my clients, oh, but HIPAA means I don't have to tell them why I'm out. I said, okay, but you're requesting a reasonable accommodation or you are requesting medical leave. So understand that they can't just know, hey, I have some
nebulous illness.
You know,
yeah, right.
Right.
My back hurts.
Right. You know, I'm on stress leave. No, you have major depressive disorder and anxiety disorder. You know, and it's hard because you don't want your employers to know that. And there are protections, right? You can go through human resources at most companies, larger companies. Your supervisor doesn't necessarily have to know what is wrong with you. But, you know, if you're in ongoing treatment for an illness and that treatment will require some kind of accommodation down the line, I feel like you have to be more forthcoming. Mm-hmm. You know, not every little thing that you're going through necessarily, but, you know, yeah, I have a back issue. It causes a lifting restriction. This is, you know, they're giving me shots. They're trying to make it better. This isn't something that I'm just ignoring and taking advantage. Mm-hmm. And that's another fine line, right? Mm-hmm. There's lots of employers who think, no, they're gaming the system.
That's right. In the Army, we called it malingering. You would be hurt. You would be hurt. And then you were legitimately hurt for a few days or weeks. And then you continue to be hurt or tell people you're when you really weren't, so you can get out of extra duty or having to do certain tasks.
Right.
And I'm sure there's a lot of fraud, waste, and abuse in the civilian world out there. As otherwise, there wouldn't be any need for you know, services like yours, right?
I actually disagree with that.
Really?
You know, my clients want to work. And when they get fired, they want to find a job. Nobody wants to sit home and worry about how they're going to pay their mortgage or how they're going to buy food for their kids. And it becomes difficult to find a job. For employees, for example, who have disabilities, if you need accommodations, you start with a brand new employer because you got terminated from one employer. You're not entitled to FMLA at that point. And who wants to walk into a job interview and say, oh, by the way, I have cancer, or, oh, by the way, I'm 4 months pregnant and I just got fired and you can't tell I'm pregnant yet.
Right.
And by the way, you can't not hire me because I just told you I'm pregnant. But
how do you know that that's the reason you didn't get the job, you know,
right,
or not the reason you didn't get the job?
Right.
You know, there's so many.
Right.
And, you know, there's, like you say, there's so many areas where, you know, I think as a small business owner, I think in some cases you may not be as educated on these issues, you know, as you might need to be, you know, and how do you go about doing that? I mean, most of the people that we're talking to are don't have full HR departments or situations like that.
Right.
So, you know, how does a business owner go about learning these things in an efficient way, I guess?
Well, there's lots of ways to do that. Mm-hmm. There are employment attorneys and former HR people who've started consulting companies who can come in and do training. And it, you know, the cost is probably worth it to avoid what might happen down the road. There are so many former defense attorneys, still defense attorneys, but that will do advice and counseling. You know, you can pay a retainer and then call them with your questions as they come up. But, you know, the internet is also a wonderful, I shouldn't disclose that secret, but it's a wonderful source of if something is about a decision that you have to make as an employer is striking you as something you need to be careful about, do a quick search and then call a lawyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know,
there's, you're probably not the first person that's had to face that issue.
Right.
Therefore, go to the internet.
Or, you know, have that lawyer shop around for a lawyer that you can relate to. There's plenty of lawyers with various hourly rates and various flat fee arrangements that will do advice and counseling for small businesses routinely. You know, they'll help you draft a handbook.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'd like to ask you about from the employee side then. So I'm going through something, employer's not treating me right. I know things are not right, but I've got to pick up the phone and call someone like you. What's that first conversation like? And then, you know, ultimately I'm probably worried, how do I pay for it too?
So the bulk of our work and the bulk of most plaintiffs' employment attorneys' work is contingency fee work. There are some people, including us, who will do some hourly advice work for people who are trying to navigate a minefield at work. For example, you know, if an employee just found out they're sick, if they were to call me for advice on how to talk to their employer, how to request their accommodation, how to request FMLA, that's something I could do for them on an hourly basis. Mm-hmm. It probably wouldn't be more than an hour or two of advice, you know?
So that first conversation is you just getting to know them, their situation, and whether they're a right fit for you and your services.
Right. But what happens more often than not, obviously, is we're getting the calls after bad things have happened. You know, I can't tell you how often I say to potential clients and clients, I wish you had called me a year ago.
Yeah.
I wish you had called me 6 months ago. So many people think, well, I can handle it on my own to start off with, or I can't afford to pay someone. At the end of the day, it's still cheaper than losing your job.
Right. Yeah. So make that call as soon as you maybe have like that gut feeling, mm-hmm. or maybe you're in the break room and you're reading those employee rights that are always posted and you're like, hey, I fall in at number three there. I need to call Cheryl Legree over there at Legree Atwood and Wolf because I know she can help and has helped others in the past. Can you just give us an example? No names of anybody, but somebody you helped all the way through. They saw a problem at work. You helped them. And then what was the outcome of all that?
So I think it's that most often happens in the ADA context with the Americans with Disabilities Act, where they're trying to get an accommodation at work. Employees don't have all the rights they think they have. And when I say that, what I mean by that is you don't necessarily get the accommodation you want.
Yeah.
You get employers have to negotiate with employees to come up with a reasonable accommodation that will work for the company and work for the employee. So, and let me give you a for instance on that. Well, I really want to telecommute. Well, your company doesn't allow telecommuting for anyone. And they have a legitimate reason for doing that. But they can do X, Y, and Z for you instead. That may be the reasonable accommodation that you're entitled to. So those are the kinds of things where we can help on the front end.
Mm-hmm.
You know, don't get angry. Don't do this. Don't do that. You know, people will call me. And I'll have a 15-minute conversation with them about why, you know what? You need to not complain about that because it's not legally protected. You know?
Yeah.
Or, for example, in sexual harassment situations, well, aren't they required to fire the harasser once I report him? Nope. They're not. They're required to investigate. If it's substantiated, they're required to do something. But they're not required to terminate anyone. And, you know, I think that's where employers need education, employees need education.
Where can they get this education? Do you have classes or workshops that maybe they can go to?
Employees.
The internet?
The internet is a blessing and a curse.
Yes, it is.
Because employees in California have a lot more rights than employees in Georgia.
State by state.
So be careful. Be careful. You know, it's funny, we don't do a lot of outreach and education, and it's something I've been thinking a lot about lately because it breaks my heart a little bit as someone who's a bleeding heart for these employees that they're coming to me and it's too late and there isn't necessarily anything.
So if they
had
some education up front, some awareness about the possibilities, then they perhaps could have prevented this whole snowball of effects.
That's right. That's right.
That makes sense. And not to delve too far into the political quagmire that we're in right now, but you did mention sexual harassment, and that has been headlines in the last couple of days about, you know, what asking Trump what he would do, what he would recommend Ivanka do if she were sexually harassed. And he said, go find another job. I imagine that is probably not what you would recommend to your clients. And then there was also implied that, you know, someone who is a, you know, a strong personality is not going to be harassed. And, you know, I can talk when I was an employee, I actually went through a situation like that. And, you know, I feel like I'm a pretty strong employee and I actually went through the channels, but, you know, I think there's a lot that obviously points out that there's some misconceptions about the topic of sexual harassment and what it is. And a lot of times it's kind of a punchline. And I think that's an unfortunate thing that, you know, it winds up not being taken seriously when it really is a very serious matter.
Yeah, very serious.
Sexual harassment to me is such a complicated issue.
Oh, yeah.
Because the court, what the courts define as sexual harassment is not what lay people understand sexual harassment to be. And what I mean by that is if your boss asks you out once, that's a bad business decision that your boss has made, but that's not sexual harassment.
Mm-hmm.
And I would say the public in general would believe that it is, right? Common sense is you shouldn't be having those kinds of requests at work. But right. It has to rise to a level, you know, the courts define severe and severe or pervasive. So have you been touched? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Have you been asked out every day for a year and a half? Mm-hmm. That's pervasive.
It's more about creating that environment where
it's
continual as opposed to one isolated incident.
Or severe. Mm-hmm. Or severe. So one isolated incident that's really, really, really bad and objectively really, really bad, not just I think it was terrible, but the public at large would think it was terrible.
Yeah.
So that's one of the complicating issues for sexual harassment. But, you know, the statements that were made were, I think, offensive to a lot of women and men in that, oh, this only happens to weak women. Well, that's just not true. Mm-hmm. That's just not true. Opportunities, we all know this, for women in the workplace are just not the same as they are for men, even now. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people sort of ignore it and brush it off because they have a good job, a good income, they're supporting their family for whatever reason. There's millions of reasons why people would tolerate it and stay where they are. You know, the comment about find another job or find another line of work, I think that was the comment.
Although, I think you're right, yeah.
Think about it. If you ever got to trial and a jury was looking at it, there would be people on the jury who think that. Well, why didn't you just leave if it was so bad? Mm-hmm. And so I don't think his statement, I think it was offensive, but I don't think it was beyond the pale. I don't.
Yeah.
I think there are jurors who believe that. Mm-hmm. You know, if your company is like that and they treat you so poorly, of course you would leave.
Yeah. And that's, and, you know, not to belabor the point, but, you know, in so many environments, you know, especially when you're talking about smaller towns where there's fewer employers or, and anything, not that that's, you know, if you're in a city, you're, you know, that's fine. But, you know, there's so many factors that come into that. And just the idea of, you know, well, go get another line of work is, well, I've been in this one for 20 years and I plan to retire from it. What do you mean?
Right.
You know, so it's just such an interesting topic to me in particular because of the fact that I think there's a lot of misunderstanding out there.
And I also think employers need to take it more seriously. You know, an employee doesn't have to or shouldn't be afraid to report what's happening for fear of losing their job. But they are. And they, you know, most people are afraid of losing their job if they make any waves at work. And setting the proper environment and tone at work where, you know, other employees that you bring in will understand this isn't tolerated. You know, we don't make sex jokes at work. We don't make racial jokes at work. It's not what we do, you know, and so I think it's an obligation of an employer to make sure that's not happening. Mm-hmm. And it by law, it is. You know, even if the conduct wouldn't necessarily rise to the level of being a hostile work environment under the law, doesn't mean you shouldn't take it seriously as an employer, nip it in the bud, fix it.
Yeah.
It speaks to the culture there that you're implementing as, you know, a leader of an organization. And as we often hear in the studio, culture is everything. So you don't want to create that environment that then could foster some sort of harassment of any kind, for
sure.
That's right. And a touch on the pay equity part of it, for our sake. So that kind of falls into all this, too. How do you know when you're not being compensated fairly based on your gender or ethnic background?
People find out. That's the funny part about it. Employers think that their employees don't talk about their salaries. First of all, you can't tell them not to, and you never should. But the reason that I put this on there is the EEOC is about to initiate starting, and it won't go into effect until March 2018, but they're the very, very tail end of requiring pay data from employers who have 100 or more employees and for people who are federal contractors who have 50 or more employees. And they're going to be looking at how much you're paying within bands of pay, you know, like, so who makes between 25 and 35,000 based on gender, race, and ethnicity.
Oh, that's going to be very interesting information.
Right. And one of the reasons they're doing it is because they say that maybe if employers take a hard look and have this in front of them and see, oh, look at that. We always pay women less than men. Mm-hmm. We need to fix that. That's really the goal here.
It's not to punish those employers, but to actually
make them
right. take a look at it.
Right. Right.
Self-adjust.
So if this becomes official, there's in a public comment period right now, but if it becomes official, then the first report would be in March 2018.
Interesting.
So, I think where pay issues come into play, it's so subtle, because you'll always hear, and I've always heard, well, women just don't ask when they get hired for the same amount of money as men ask for from their employer. And I'm paying Mary less than Joe because Joe asked for more. So my advice to women is ask for what you're worth.
Yeah. Ask for more.
Mm-hmm. Ask for more.
Yeah.
Right. But I think the other thing is, unless they actually analyze the information, employers don't really necessarily know they're doing it. A lot of times they do. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's pretty blatant in some places.
But you don't think there's, grown men sitting around a mahogany table saying, let's pay her less. Let's just give her less money because that's who we are as a company. I don't know if anybody's doing it maliciously either. I think it's just the way the whole world's kind of balancing out right now. And unless we become more aware and make more procedures in place, then that's the way it will trend.
There's some truth to that. And there's a big, there's implicit bias, right? I mean, speaking from a law firm perspective, mm-hmm. there's a lot of research on the issue of the fact that the male partners are evaluating the female and the male associates, and the women are just making less money than the men because implicitly male partners are rating female associates' performance lower than men. And it may not be on objective measures. Hmm. Most of the time it's not. It's just some subtle and subjective,
natural kind of
tendencies. Right. And so unless you take a look at them and intentionally look at these things, I'm not sure that it's anything that's ever going to be fixed.
Hmm.
And which we know it does as the world is becoming more an equal place for everyone in the workplace. And
right.
And so these kind of things are what we need to look at as business owners, as employees, as we're out there shopping ourselves for jobs. You shouldn't settle for a place that even in your interview, if you feel that this not is the right fit for you, there's other options out there. And we love these lists that come out here in Atlanta from time to time, the best places to work, happiest employees or whatever. And so we'd love to feature them. So what are you doing at your practice to instill good culture and make sure you're treating everyone fairly and avoiding the pitfalls that we just discovered here?
Right. Well, we're small, first of all. But it was really important to us as a labor and employment firm that represents employees that our employees be happy. So we do things that we're not required to do, right? I mean, we have a 401k, even though there's five of us total.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. We will comply with overtime laws and pay overtime if our employees work overtime. We're just a startup, but in December, we decided, we might not be able to give the biggest bonuses this year, but hey, I'm going to give you another week of vacation and I'm going to give you another week of vacation. You two decide when you want to split these days up over the holidays. We don't care. And I look a lot of times at employment decisions as do the right thing, even though it might not be necessarily the best thing for your business. And I guess I think about that from the perspective of sick employees. So the FMLA may not apply to you and you may have an employee get sick. Do what you have to do for the business, but also remember, I mean, my employees are my friends and family.
Mm-hmm.
And if my employee gets sick, I'm going to give them the time off, even though I'm not required to. I'm not going to say, oh, you're fired. And, no employment firm wants that reputation, right? No plaintiff's employment firm wants that reputation.
I don't think anyone wants that reputation. Right. And, ultimately, I think when you do treat people right, they are very loyal. They will, understand when, they may have to work a little bit of overtime because of a certain situation. You know what? It's that give and take sort of relationship.
Right.
I think that creates the culture that Ryan was referring to.
Right.
It's let's all be nice nice people in some ways. Right. I know that's a very simplistic way to put it. But, you know, I think that comes, it does come back to you.
Yeah, I feel like I'm naive sometimes when I say that. People will think I'm naive when I say those things. But I'll tell you, as employers, if you're terminating an employee, it doesn't matter why. Don't walk them out with a security guard, because the first thing they're going to do is get on the phone and call my firm.
Yeah.
Because they're going to think that they were discriminated against somehow, or that something's wrong. You know, don't go talking to everyone in your company about your sick employee and why they're sick. Don't, you know, there's certain things that communication with your employees can keep them out of my office more often than not. So
that's good advice for sure. So get some legal counsel advice if you feel like you're in need, be it an employee or an employer. So what's next for you guys over there? Are you going to be growing and looking for more? Or are you going to be handling more cases? What's next for you in 2016 and beyond?
We are extremely busy. You know, we're still in this startup phase, I think. It's only been a little over a year. We hope to grow and have some other lawyers working for us, probably in the next 12 months. You know, the phones are ringing off the hook, and we're grateful for that.
Yeah, so that's a good thing.
The cases are good.
And are these calls just coming in naturally? Are you being referred by other firms? Where are you finding the bulk of your calls coming from?
I would say the majority of our business comes from former clients, former lawyers that I have worked with, both at defense firms and at plaintiffs' firms. You know, and I think that's the best way to get a referral if you're an employee who needs help. You know, reach out to someone you know who might have had their own litigation, or someone you know that knows a lawyer to find out who can help you. But our business is 90% direct referral based.
I think that's pretty common for most law firms, certainly.
Right.
Yeah, and doing good work continues to help.
Oh, yeah, my opposing counsel will refer me cases all the time.
That's great.
That's awesome. And so if you need help out there, how would you recommend, what's some good coordinates for our listeners to find you?
To find me? Yeah. Well, our website is law-llc.com, and our main line is 470, and yes, that is 470. It's this weird new Atlanta area code. 823-4000.
Right. How about that website, Bonnie? Law-llc.com.
I know.
That's a good one.
Pretty awesome, isn't it?
Yeah. Very powerful. How'd you get that one?
Well, it, by accident, but if any of us leaves, we have to replace the lawyer.
You can only hire somebody with a L-A or W last name.
I like it.
That's right.
Yeah, or if you add another partner or something. Yeah, there you go. But again, that's law-llc.com is the website. You can call them at 470-823-4000. Directly. They're located in Peachtree Street there in Midtown.
Right. We're in Colony Square.
Colony Square. So if you want to get some advice there, and you service and help clients all over Atlanta and the Southeast as well?
So I'm licensed in South Carolina and Georgia, but we primarily work in Georgia, but all over the state. We have cases in Savannah, cases in Columbus and Macon.
That's good. Some of our listeners do tune in from around the state, so they know they can call you directly to get the help they need if they have questions and everything. So so thank you so much, Cheryl, for joining us here today on Atlanta's Most Trusted Advisors. Look forward to speaking with you again.
Thank you for having me.
All right. Thank you, Bonnie. Once again, a good show. Tell our listeners how they can find you at BBR Marketing.
Just by typing in bbrmarketing.com online, or typing in the same thing on pretty much any social media page as well.
There you have it. And we'll have all the information posted up on atlantabusinessradio.com for you to check out later, download, share, and amplify from there. So thank you so much for tuning in today. Until next time, on behalf of Stone Payton and Lee Cantor and the entire Business Radio X Network, I'm Ryan Redhawk McPherson. We will see you on the radio.